and welcome to the Rick House. Cyrus Farmer here. I am your host, and this is the Stomp the Tea podcast. Folks, let me tell you, we have a lot to get into tonight, so let me tell you what you can expect. We are going to be talking, obviously, about your golf game. I know it's December right now, and a lot of you are, depending on what part of the country you're in, especially in the Midwest, especially along the East Coast, all you see is snow and 30-degree temperatures. But I'm telling you, the golf season will be here before you know it. Now is the time to start planning and preparing for what you are going to work on for the following season. That's what we're going to talk about tonight. We're going to talk about that. We're going to talk about golf swing thoughts. I prefer to keep it simple. You may not, but I'll tell you what I do, and you can actually give me your opinion on that. We're also going to be talking about this phenomenon, apparently, that I ran across earlier this week called soft girl, soft girl era, soft life. It's apparently something that is starting to pick up steam among Gen Z women. And I think you'll find it interesting, and I have some thoughts about it. I'd love to hear what you think about it as well. And also, as always, we will be talking about the ever-popular What Are You Drinking Tonight? But before we get started, I do want to do a little housekeeping. Of course, if you follow this show, if you track us on the socials, you are aware that this show now has an audio version. Both on Apple Podcasts, on Spotify, and several other podcasts to boot. So don't forget to tell your friends, as we always say, don't forget to tell your enemies. Tell anyone you know that they can now get the audio version of the Stomp the Tea podcast, and that will be available each week, just like the video version has been available on all our socials for the last 2 months plus. Anyway, with that being said, I do want to talk a little bit about the NFL. I thought it was an interesting week that we saw big wins for the Eagles, big wins for the Bills, big wins for the Steelers. You know, the Vikings and the Chiefs and the Lions, they gutted out some wins on their own. But I'm telling you, home field advantage is really going to come down to just white knuckle times for both conferences. I do think that the Eagles have an opportunity to take the home field advantage from the Lions, but let's be fair. We have to start talking more about the Minnesota Vikings, and I know it's popular to kind of shift the focus to the Lions, shift the focus to the Eagles. But I watched a little bit of that Arizona-Minnesota game this past weekend. And the Vikings, I'm telling you, they're a good football team. I know Sam Darnold is not, he's not the kind of quarterback you would bet the house on. If you were trying to predict who was going to get home field advantage or who's even going to go to the Super Bowl, Minnesota as a franchise has been kind of a tough luck franchise. They've gotten to Super Bowls, they've lost them all, and they've had teams good enough to get Super Bowl and haven't gotten there. But I'm telling you, this team, I think, may be more of a problem than most of us believe. They have a good defense. And Brian Flores, in my opinion, is a great defensive coordinator. And the problem is, with their solid running game, if Aaron Jones isn't fumbling the ball, Sam Darnold doesn't have to be Superman to get that team to the Super Bowl. I mean, with Jefferson and Jordan Addison, I mean, their receivers, their tight end is good, Hawkinson. I mean, Minnesota, quiet as it's kept, is a very sneaky threat to get home field advantage throughout the playoffs. And if that happens, that could change quite a few things. So that being said, I still like where the Eagles are. I still think that Detroit, as much pressure as they've had on them, will find a way to keep their total losses to 3 or less. So that means that Minnesota is going to have to do their part and defeat the Lions on the last game of the season. I think they play the last game of the season. And we'll see if that ends up giving Minnesota a 2-loss season or 3-loss season or 4-loss season. Who knows? That being said, the Eagles, we talked about this a month ago. We said that they're going to show you who they are over this next stretch of 4 games. I think in those 4 games, they played the Cowboys, the Commanders, the Rams, and the Ravens. And I said they need to go 3-1 in those 4 games. 2-2 could be a problem. Turns out they went 4-0. This Eagles team is literally, it still has room to grow. And again, if Jalen can take care of the football, it is going to be very difficult to beat this team. Now, here in Philadelphia, you have a lot of talk radio people talking about, well, is this offense good enough to win in the postseason? Is Jalen a game manager, or is he a dynamic quarterback? Can you really count on Barkley to lead this team and do what he's been doing all season? Folks, I'm telling you right now, I've watched this Eagles team. They are only getting better. I am not worried one bit about what Jalen Hurts will and can do in the playoffs. I've seen Jalen in the playoffs. He rises to the occasion more often than not. Look, he had a bad play in the Super Bowl 2 years ago against Kansas City. The defense didn't show up 2 years ago against Kansas City, largely because of the field conditions, possibly. But for whatever the reason was, the Eagle defense wasn't nearly as good against Kansas City at all as they had been during the regular season. But Jalen Hurts, by rights, should have been the MVP of that Super Bowl in a loss. He was that good. So I'm not worried about Jalen Hurts. We're going to have Devontae Smith back. I am concerned about the next 2 weeks, because this week the Eagles play the Carolina Panthers, and that has trap game written all over it, because the week after, the Eagles play the Steelers here in Philadelphia as well. I want the Eagles to go out and take care of their business against Carolina. No team is unbeatable. No team is a guaranteed win. But beat the Panthers, do what you're supposed to do, then you can focus on Pittsburgh, which I think is going to be a very difficult game. Winnable, but difficult. But they need to actually make sure they don't fall asleep on the Panthers, because if you do fall asleep on any team in the NFL, you can lose. So hopefully that is the message that Coach Sirianni is giving to the troops, and we'll see how they do moving forward. Bills, boy, they're so good at home. They are playing incredibly well. I'll be really fascinated to see, you know, the Lions got kind of a tough stretch here. They got Thursday, they got the game. Actually, we're recording this on Wednesday night, but that's tomorrow we'll release it. So Thursday, the game is against the Packers, and that's a huge game for both teams. How good are the Packers? Can they save their playoff hopes by winning that game against Detroit? Detroit, I feel like they're kind of leaking oil. They keep getting injuries. They keep finding ways to win games, but it's not so hard being number one. It's not so easy being the hunted versus being the hunter. So let's see what they do against Green Bay. I think that's going to be a fascinating game this week. And then, of course, Lions, Bills the following week. It is a huge game for both teams. Bills are trying to get the number one seed. They're trying to catch Kansas City, who may actually end up losing another game between now and the end of the year. Who knows? So we'll see who holds serve. One other thing I wanted to get into before we start the show tonight is something that I neglected to talk about last week, and that is Christmas music. Those of you who celebrate Christmas, Christmas music obviously is a big part of the celebration. Look, I have a question for you. When is too early to play Christmas music? Well, for some people, there's no reason to stop playing Christmas music. I get it. But for me, personally, I want to give Thanksgiving its due. I'm a big fan of Thanksgiving, as I told you last week. So I don't take this the wrong way. I'm going to say this, but it's not like I'm, you know, Lord of the Castle, my way or the highway, right? Look, I've come to an understanding with my wife and the rest of my family, and we don't play Christmas music in the house before Black Friday. Black Friday makes perfect sense. Everyone's out shopping or not, even if just hanging around the house. You start doing your Christmas decorations. Christmas music is fine then. But as long as I'm around, we are not doing Christmas music in the house before Black Friday. We will give Thanksgiving its just due. Now, my wife's probably been listening to Christmas music in the car, I think she said, for like at least a month. So, you know, that's fine. Yeah, she's allowed. You know, you can do what you want to do. It's your car. I don't know. I took my wife to a Christmas concert this past Sunday. A guy named Brett Eldridge. He has a couple Christmas albums. One's called Glow. He has another hit called Mr. Christmas. Guy out of Illinois, has kind of a country feel, but good vocalist, solid singer. His concert was held at the Met in Philadelphia on Broad Street. And I have to say, it was an interesting show. Solid show. He did all the hits. He did Christmas stuff. Obviously, he's like bought into Christmas. I think he's releasing a third Christmas album this week. So he's doing his thing, which is fine. But I do think sometimes with Christmas shows and Christmas concerts, you kind of need more than just the songs to give it a Christmas feel. I think that's really helpful. If you have like fake snow falling, or if you have skits on stage about Christmas, you can't just get up there and sing the Christmas songs and expect people to feel, well, people being me, in the Christmas mood. I think you need a little bit more than that. All that being said, he did a great job. I'm going to talk about some of my favorite Christmas albums. I know it's very popular to be down on Mariah Carey because everyone is burned out on All I Want for Christmas. But be fair, that album, the first one, it is a tremendous album. She does so many Christmas classics along with her own originals that are so well done. I call me crazy, but Mariah Carey's Christmas album, the first one, it is my favorite Christmas album by far. I'm talking about ingenuity. I'm talking about vocal stylings. I'm talking about arrangements. It's just a really, 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 forget All I Want for Christmas, which is a great song, by the way. There's a reason it gets played all the time, every year. But just the other songs, you know, she has a song called I Miss You Most at Christmas Time. It's a wonderful song, very nostalgic. I mean, that should be a monster in my mind. But for whatever reason, it hasn't had as much traction. But there are so many renditions of Christmas songs she does on that album. And I'm a huge fan. So go, Mariah. Keep doing what you do. We'll never be against you here at Stomp the T. Another favorite of mine is the Stevie Wonder Christmas album, Someday at Christmas, Ave Maria. He does so many great, great renditions of Christmas songs. I like the Kelly Clarkson, you know, I think it's Wrapped in Red. Her Christmas album is actually very, very good. My wife turned me on to it, and I was very, very surprised. It's a very, very good staple. It's a big staple in our house, and I like it. And I think she's actually part of the new classics, so good for Kelly Clarkson. What do you think? Also, another favorite of my wife is the Whitney Houston Christmas album, which I think is very strong, very strong. But the final of my favorites, and again, all these that I've mentioned are my favorites too. But this was another favorite of my wife. She introduced me to it. And that's the Michael Bublé Christmas album. I guess it's the first one. I think he only has one. But it is just very clean, very crisp. It's a good, good, solid album. So, Bully for Bublé. Good job. All right, now, on to the show. I have three goals for this upcoming golf season. We're talking about golf goals and swing thoughts. My first goal is to get down in three from 50 yards and out. What do I mean when I say that? Some of you who are golfers know what I mean, but I will tell, for those of you who are not golfers, I will explain. Down in three means that however many shots it takes me to get 50 yards from the hole on any given golf hole, I want to actually take no more than three strokes to get that ball in the hole, right? So whether it's one chip and two putts, whether it's two chips and one putt, whether it's three putts, doesn't matter. I want to get down in three from 50 yards and out. Goal number two, I want to make sure that I hit every first putt past the hole. What do I mean when I say that? There is a tendency, especially if you play good golf courses and the greens are fast, to leave putts short because you don't want to have too much left coming back to two putt. But I want to make sure every putt, if I don't make the first putt, I want to make sure it goes past the hole. I don't want to leave myself short and end up with a shorter version of the same putt I had before. We'll talk about that in a minute. And my third and final goal this season, I want to make sure that I three putt only once per side. What do I mean when I say that? I want to make sure there are three legs to golf. There's the front half, there's the back half, and then there's the cumulative, right? The front half and back half total together. Three putts are a problem for most amateurs, and I am trying to eliminate as many three putts as I can. So I want to make sure that I do no more than one three putt on the first nine holes, no more than one three putt on holes 10 through 18, the second nine holes. So that will limit me to two three putts per round. That is a goal. Who knows if I can achieve it or not, but that is definitely, definitely a goal. Now, I tried just to go over these three goals. I tried last season to focus on down in three as a goal from a farther distance before. Last season, I said, let's be down in three from 100 yards and in, right? But there was only one problem with that. In the off season, I forgot what a lousy golfer I am. So from 100 yards, I very rarely achieved that goal. You're like, Cy, what's the big deal? I don't understand. Yeah, understand this. I'm a lousy golfer. It might take me four or five to get down from 100 yards. Right? Who knows where the ball's going to go? But it was a goal. You live, you learn. I'm making adjustments. So this season, I am trying that same goal with an adjustment. I want to do down in three from 50 yards. So I really want to focus on my chipping, which I think will help me, obviously, quite a bit with that. And that'll be goal number one for this season. By the way, when we talk about, you know, golf, how many rounds of golf do you guys play a year? And look, I'm not being jealous or being negative about anyone who lives in a warmer climate, right? California, you know, Arizona, all those Western states where you can play year-round. New Mexico, you know, New Mexico has a couple of great golf courses. But here in the Northeast and in the Midwest, we have golf seasons here simply because of the weather. Now, I do think that usually in a good summer, for me, I'll play 12 to 15 times in a year, which is pretty good for me. How many rounds of golf do you guys get in? I played golf during the pandemic with a guy who was retired. We were playing a great course here in Philadelphia area called Jeffersonville. Donald Ross design in Norristown. He told me that during the pandemic, I think it was either 20 or 21 when we played, he said that year he played 90 rounds of golf. That's 9-0. There are 52 weeks in a year, folks. So he was playing a couple times a week, easy. 90 rounds of golf is a lot of golf. I mean, boy, oh boy. I mean, that would be a dream. You better be pretty good. If you play 90 rounds of golf a year, you better be pretty good. If I can get 20 rounds of golf in a year, I will definitely be better. So for me, it's around 12 to 15. Anyway, as far as the first putt past the hole, you know, Tiger always had a saying. And he said he always wanted to hit his first putt past the hole, regardless of whether he missed or made it. Because if he missed it, he knew what the putt would do on the way back. And that's why I want to hit my first putt past the hole. Problem with that is that it becomes more difficult to do after you step on the gas on the first three holes on putts, and they go by 5, 10, 15 feet because we want to make sure it gets past the hole. And you're like, you know, I could two-putt this from here. So, you know, it takes discipline. It takes strategy. It takes nerve. It takes a whole bunch of things, some of which I have, some of which I don't. But the goal is to try to hit every putt past the hole this season on my first putt. Then I'll take my chances after that. Now, three putts. We talked about doing three putts aside. It's scorecard. Three putt is a scorecard wrecker. You really want to try to eliminate that as much as possible. Please. You know, the three putts, it's just such a problem. So I want to try to do one per side. And if I really focus on doing one per side, I don't have to be perfect. I just can't do more than one. Then hopefully that's going to help my scoring. We will see. I will report back. As far as golf swing thoughts are concerned, generally speaking, I have two swing thoughts. And I repeat these swing thoughts to myself silently. Literally every single time I am over the ball when it's not a putt or a chip. It has to be a tee shot or a full or a half iron swing. For whatever reason, I don't have a swing thought for my putter, and I don't have a swing thought for any chips that I have. Maybe I should come up with those. Maybe that would help. But my swing thought for tee shots and full and half iron shots, two things. I think, number one, tempo. And number two, I think, head down. What do I mean by those two things? First one, tempo. When I say tempo, I want to take the club back slowly. I don't want to get rushed. I don't want a super fast backswing because I'm excited and then duff a shot. I can duff a shot by having a slow backswing, but I want to remind myself, try to take the club back slowly. Head down. Obviously, that's self-explanatory, but I want to make sure I try to see the club hit the ball. Sometimes I'm successful with that. Sometimes I'm not. There's always an inclination to look up to see where the ball's going. And that's what I don't want to do. I want to actually keep my head down through the swing, through contact. And then if I make good contact, I'll be able to look up and spot the ball, as all of you know, very easily. But it's kind of a bugaboo in most people's game. You know, you don't keep your head down. And I find those two kind of shorthand phrases work well, instead of saying, keep your head down, don't look up while I'm over the ball, or make sure you have a slow, even backswing. Instead, I say tempo, I say head down. That way I'm not standing over the ball for like 4 days on every shot. All right. That is the golf segment of the program. Folks, I want to tell you, I heard about something earlier this week, and I want to have your opinion on it. This is called something called soft girl, and some people describe it as a soft girl life, soft girl aesthetic. I've even heard there's something called slow life, which plays into being a soft girl. Now, what does this mean? Apparently, this is a phenomenon that is kind of popular on TikTok among Gen Z women who aspire to this as an ideal, like as a way to live. I'm going to read this quote for you guys. This is per Glamour magazine. This came out, I think, it was published in October of 2023. So this is just over a year old, this article was. And this is how Glamour magazine explained it. It says, the soft girl does not value the grind or getting ahead. She prioritizes slow living. Her days are filled with a nearly obsessive focus on self-care, from making the perfect morning smoothie to tending to her skin and trading in hardcore HIIT classes, which stands for high intensity interval training workouts, for leisurely cozy cardio, which from what I've discovered is basically walking. The focus for soft girls and slow life really is about staying at home with the kids. They're not interested in quote-unquote making partner or founding their own company. Now, this idea has traction with women from the Generation Z generation. Apparently, it's a large thing, and it's growing larger every day. Says the soft life is about having time, space, and a protection to heal the feminine. It says soft life is romanticizing every moment of your day. Soft life is releasing the compulsion to produce and accomplish. It also says the soft life, it's a rejection of the whole premise of the quote-unquote girl boss. Now, folks, I got to tell you, when I first heard about this, and this was literally a couple of days ago, I actually thought it was a joke. I thought it was some kind of satire piece. But apparently this is a real thing that young women are kind of adopting as a lifestyle choice. Essentially, and forgive me if I get this wrong, but based off of my understanding over, 2 days, 3 days, it's kind of like being a kept woman. Not that that's a negative. I'm just giving you a comparative. And literally, if you have a boyfriend or a husband, and you will stay at home and be the stay-at-home mom, or some women are even stay-at-home girlfriends without children. And so they can actually get into a better touch with their feminine side. Now, soft life is kind of, as I understand it, it's kind of rooted in finding a better work-life balance. You know, that's important. Work-life balance is very important. You know, one of the things that gets cited a lot is the Marissa Mayer. I guess she was with Google for years and took over Yahoo as the CEO for a little while. You know, she worked from her hospital bed after giving birth to twins. It's a little extreme. But in her position, she probably had to work, or at least she felt she had to work. Now, the problem is, this is my opinion, this whole concept of being a soft girl or living a soft life, it just feels like there's a lack of ambition connected to this whole theory of soft life. Look, if you love, you know, there's the old saying, you know, if you love what you do, you never work a day in your life, right? Well, what is possibly wrong about working hard if there is an ambition to succeed? I think that working hard is not a negative thing necessarily. Even if you don't like what you do, even if you hate what you do, hard work is not necessarily a bad thing. Again, this is just my opinion. It also seems to me that there just seems to be a genuine lack of value placed on effort. I mean, effort is one of the few things in life that any of us can control. We can't control results. We can't control outcomes. But what each and every person in the world can do is control the amount of effort that they exert in order to try and achieve outcomes. Not guaranteed success, but there is value in trying, in my opinion. So to me, the whole soft girl template is a little misguided. Look, I may be wrong about all of this, and I'm happy to admit if that's the case. But the way I see it, this soft girl and this soft life template seems to be focused on, in some ways, living your retirement during your working years. And I just got to say, that's a little backwards to me. The older you get in life, the harder it is to sustain your level of income in any profession, simply because after a while, you're going to make too much money for the people who are paying you, not to find someone who's less experienced to do it cheaper, even if they're not going to do the job as good as you do it. The company will take the hit because it costs them less money and they can train the new person, bring them up to speed over the course of several years. You see it all the time in sports. I mean, how many athletes are good enough to play, get cut from their teams because they can pay a rookie or a second-year player less money because they're on a rookie contract. So why would you give up those earning years? Your 20s are so important to not only establishing your earning level, but also establishing, you know, finding your way through a career and kind of like making your bones. Regardless, again, you can be an architect, you can be a baker, you can be a plumber, you can be an actor, you can be an athlete. It really doesn't matter. Your 20s are so important into kind of establishing yourself in a profession. Why would you give that up to, in my view, live your retirement in your 20s? Your retirement's going to feel so much better when you've worked to get to it, because you'll have money to be able to afford to focus on your feminine power and your cycles and what makes a difference to you in this world. So, piece of advice, and you don't have to listen to me, because what do I know about being a woman? Very, very, very little. I will answer the question for you. But I will say this. Just consider doing the work that you like. You don't have to slave in a profession that doesn't appeal to you. That's fine. And work-life balance is incredibly important, no matter what your profession. But consider, if you feel kind of put upon, if you feel a little aggrieved, if you feel out of sorts about, you know, the grind, think about trying to find something that you actually enjoy as a profession and pursue that with all you have in you. Because I promise you, 20, 30, 40 years later, you will be rewarded. Trust me on that one. All right, folks, this is the part of the show that I always look forward to. I have a question for you. What are you drinking tonight? Well, I can tell you what I am drinking. I am drinking I'm showing this to the screen for you audio listeners, the Charles Goodnight Texas Straight Bourbon. Folks, this particular bottle is kind of an enigma, and I will explain why shortly, but let me give you some stats first. This is a high rye bourbon. Let me give you the mash bill. 60% corn, 36% rye. I should say whopping 36% rye and 4% barley. It is aged 6 years old. The ABV is 57.5%. That makes it 115 proof. Now, I got this bottle for $60, 60, from K&L Wines out in Los Angeles. Had it shipped here. I didn't include the count of shipping, cost of shipping, because I had several other bottles delivered. But locally, I've seen this here, Total Wine and other stores here in Pennsylvania. Total Wine, obviously, is in New Jersey and Delaware. But I've seen this Charles Goodnight for $70 to $80 a bottle. So I'm not sure what you can get it for, but expect to do it closer to $80 than to $60. Now, this bourbon is bottled by the Goodnight Distillery, which is located in Mira Loma, California. So I know what you might be thinking. You're like, Cyrus, what are you talking about? I thought this is a Texas straight bourbon whiskey. Well, I thought the same thing, but let me give you a little bit more information. The founder of this distillery is a guy called Bill Foley. Now, Bill is supposedly Charles Goodnight was supposedly the great-great uncle of Bill Foley, who is the owner of Foley Family Wines. He also happens to own the Las Vegas Golden Knights, which is a hockey team in the NHL. They were one of the expansion teams that came in a couple of years ago, won a championship. So in a weird way, this whole Charles Goodnight bourbon, it's kind of a celebrity brand, even though nobody knows who Bill Foley is. I mean, it's someone dipping into the whiskey business. This is a wine guy. Someone dipping into the whiskey business who wants to actually try to create something that may or may not gain traction. So, as I said, Charles Goodnight was the great-great uncle of Bill Foley. And Charles Goodnight supposedly is a legendary cattleman. He was a Texas Ranger, and according to the Charles Goodnight website, he is the inventor of the chuck wagon. He invented the chuck wagon as a way to feed his ranch hands when they did these 2,000-mile treks of longhorn cattle from Texas Panhandle up into Oklahoma or Missouri, wherever they sold their beef. Guys, the bourbon, it's clearly sourced. But from where? No one knows. I shouldn't say no one knows. I don't know. I can't find anywhere on the internet where there's information of where it's actually distilled. Now, I saw a rep. I met a rep at the Whiskey Fest from Whiskey Advocate Magazine. He says that it's in Goodnight, Texas, which is about 40 miles outside of Austin. But he did not say what the distillery is called and where they get their liquor from, their bourbon from. I assumed at the time it was from the Goodnight Distillery, but clearly the Goodnight Distillery is located in Mira Loma, California. Now, they make a big point on their website and in other places of stating that the bourbon is made with all Texas components. Texas corn, Texas water, and it is allegedly distilled in Texas. But again, we don't know where and by whom. So, I got to tell you, to me, whiskey and bourbon is about storytelling. Now, a good story will make you feel so much better about any product, whether it's bourbon, popcorn, sushi, a cheesesteak, a hoagie, pizza. A good story will make you feel so much better about that product. Now, this Charles Goodnight is a solid story. Texas roots, Texas made, allegedly. But we know for a fact that there are Texas whiskeys and bourbons that are genuinely distilled in Texas. And we don't have to guess where. Garrison Brothers, Balcones. They tell us exactly where their operation is located. So you don't have to guess. So I wanted to like it more than I did. And I liked it. Look, it's spicy, but it's sweet. It's very strange because the sweetness is very distinctive, but the spiciness doesn't hurt you. It's not heartburning at all. It doesn't burn off your taste buds on your tongue or anything. It's muted, but it's there every single sip. I like Charles Goodnight bourbon. I just wish I knew where it was distilled. And it almost feels, and I'm not saying this is true, but it almost feels like a fake Texas whiskey, which I am sure it is not. But boy, would I love to know where it is distilled. So, if you can find it for $60 a bottle, pick it up. $80. Probably not worth picking up. Okay. That is the show for tonight. Folks, as always, don't forget to like, subscribe, tell your friends, tell your enemies, all that stuff that you would do to support any podcast that you like. My name is Cyrus Farmer. We're going to be back we'll be back 7 days from now have more scintillating content for you. But until then, once again, my name is Cyrus Farmer, Stomp the Tea Podcast. Thank you again for watching. Thank you again for listening. And as always, we will see you on the first tea.